I know more than a few people who wish they could write like Tim Cahill, wish they could travel like Tim Cahill, wish they were Tim Cahill. They've been reading his essays in Outside Magazine and elsewhere for more than 20 years, joining him vicariously on journeys to remote and dangerous places where thugs and sometimes bugs conspire to make a good story. Tim Cahill has a new collection of stories out called Hold the Enlightenment, More Travel, Less Bliss, and he joins us now from Bozeman, Montana. Tim, the title story appeared in Yoga Journal, which is not a place I'd expect to find what you've even described as writing with a lot of testosterone. I'd like you to read the very first paragraph and tell us a little bit about that story.
I'm not a yoga kind of guy. Yoga people are sensitive, aware, largely sober, slender, double-jointed, humorless vegans who are concerned with their own spiritual welfare and don't hesitate to tell you about it. They are spiritually intense and consequently enormously boring in the manner of folks who, in their own self-absorption, feel you ought to be alerted as to the quantity and texture of their last bowel movement. Or so I used to think. I did that story for Yoga Journal. An editor named Todd Jones in Berkeley, California, called me up and said, would you like to take a yoga class? And I said, no, I'm not a yoga kind of guy. He said, well, it is next February and it is in Jamaica. And I was sitting here in Montana looking out the window at the cows in the field with the ice all over them and said, oh, yoga. So I decided to take that particular course. It occurred to me that maybe it would be good if I knew something about yoga. And I asked Todd Jones to send me an introductory text. And I read those texts. And what I was able to glean from that is that the yoga poses or asanas were developed some as many as 5,000 years ago to give people control over their body. The reason people wanted to have control over their bodies was so that physicality wouldn't get in the way when they meditated. And the goal of meditation was eventual enlightenment.
And did you become enlightened?
I successfully avoided enlightenment, but I strongly resisted it, and I'll tell you why. Enlightenment is a very, very poor career path for a writer. All the enlightened masters I've ever read are kind of like, the prose is like swimming your way up through a vat of custard. It's thick, incomprehensible. And to my way of thinking, because I don't understand it, gibberish. The other point is that enlightened masters are generally self-published. That is, they pay someone to publish the books. And I prefer the alternate path in which the publisher pays you. So I thought that if I became enlightened, that I would lose my jobs in the publishing industry such as they are, and my mortgage would go unpaid, my wife would leave me, and I'd wander the world in raggedy clothes, informing the less spiritually fortunate of a knowledge higher and more above. What I'm saying is that I equated enlightenment with homelessness, and so I strove to avoid it. As a matter of fact, I called Todd Jones, the editor at Yoga Journal, and I said, Todd, I am going to take the course, and I'm going to do the best that I possibly can. And I know that enlightenment's a long shot. I mean, all the books say so, and people strive all their lives. But what if I'm a guy who gets it right away? I mean, what if I happen to be just one of these yoga geniuses? I sit cross-legged in a room, and suddenly, bam, I see it. The blinding curve of energy that is life itself, our total interconnection. At that moment, I would be totally and irrevocably screwed. So I said I was going to resist enlightenment, but if through some cruel trick of fate I did become enlightened, I was going to drive out there to Berkeley, California and kick his butt around the block.
But, you know, this idea of testosterone-infused writing, it came up at a writer's conference in Salt Lake City recently where there were some, you know, kind of complaints about the writing that... That you weren't named, but there were references to modern outdoor magazines, such as the one you write for Outside, in which there were complaints about adrenaline and testosterone-driven writing that's lacking in substance. Do you have a response to that?
In large part, I agree exactly with entirely entirely too much of what we read in the outdoor and adventure type magazines are what I would call gratuitous chest thumping. And it doesn't particularly make for a good story, especially if you are a testosterone-infused, highly macho, highly competent physical guy. Where's the drama in that? That's what I want to know. I mean, it is much better to put someone like me, incompetent and highly frightened, at the bottom of a mountain and say, okay, pal, climb that, than to put Superman, because Superman can leap tall buildings in a single bound. Of course Superman's going to do it. I think I have the ability to speak for your average reader. This is what it would be like if you tried this.
One common theme in the stories in this book and your other stories is that something bad has to happen, it seems. Is it possible to have adventure writing work without a disaster or danger to write about?
Nope. That's the dirty little secret. And the dirty little secret is, and I'm going to whisper it so that not everybody can hear, something has to go wrong. If something doesn't go wrong, you don't have much to write about. You know, if you go to an idyllic resort and everybody's very nice to you and you lie on the beach, what is there to write about? What you write about are obstacles and overcoming obstacles.
So how do you work? Do you come up with the adventure story first, pursue it, and then write about it? Or are you just going out on travels happening across things that turn out to be adventures and then write about it?
Well, incompetence turns out to be very, very helpful because if you screw up logistically, you are probably going to have an adventure somewhere. An adventure, as I define it, is intense emotional or spiritual or physical discomfort recollected in tranquility. An adventure is never an adventure when it's happening. It's always really no fun at all.
You write about risk in this book. You have a story about your own experience in which you're at El Capitan in Yosemite National Park, the rock face that's a half mile high. You hadn't clipped into your rope appropriately in the right way. And you find this out at the top, and so you have to do probably the most dangerous thing of all. You have to unclip from the protective rope to get over the lip of the cliff at the top. And I like the paragraph that begins, "There was no thinking at all."
There was no thinking at all, not in the ordinary sense of brooding contemplation. Risk sets its own rules, and one reacts to them instinctively, with an empty mind, in a state that some psychologists believe is akin to meditation. And like the meditative state, risk-takers sometimes feel they've caught a glimpse into eternity, into the wisdom of the universe, and into the curve of blinding light itself. Just a glimpse. The stories we tell are the ways we organize our experiences in order to understand our lives. I didn't say that risk is always a story about mortality, and that mortality is the naked and essential human condition. We put these stories together in poems and essays and novels and in after-dinner conversations in an effort to crowbar some meaning out of the pure terror of our existence. The stories are prisms through which we perceive the world. They are like the lenses we look through in the optometrist's office. Put them together incorrectly and it's all a blur. But drop in the correct stories, turn them this way and that, and all at once, there's a sudden clarity. Call it enlightenment, and admit that none of us ever gets there all the way. We only see glimpses of it in a flashbulb moment when certain selected stories fall together just right. That's all.
The book is Hold the Enlightenment, More Travel, Less Bliss, and the author is Tim Cahill. Tim, thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.